Welcome to Kane & Rince Sound of Play. For many of us, it's hard to think of almost any video game without our minds conjuring up the music that accompanied it. Over the decades, they've evolved from simplistic monaural beeps and bloops to full orchestral scores recorded in 7.1 surround. But from their earliest days right up to today, soundtracks have played an integral part of our memories of the games we played and the times in our lives when we were playing them. What we aim to bring you with Sound of Play is a diverse sample of our favourite pieces from the many air-punching, spine-tingling, tear-jerking and grin-inducing video game soundtracks we've heard over the years. Of course, it's not just about what we like, so if you venture over to our forum at kaneandrince.com, you can put forward your favourites and we'll start to include a selection of those in the playlist for each show. Now joining me, Leon Cox, in this Sound of Play, we have Jay Taylor.
Hello.
And Ryan Heyman.
Hello there.
A new project. Here we go. We've each brought some tracks to the table, some favourites, and let's start, Ryan, with your first tune. Why have you brought it? What is it? And what do you like about it?
All right. This is the main theme from a smaller game called Super Ubi Land, which was released for PC, Mac, and Linux last year, and is still in development for the Wii U at the time. It is composed by a Callum Bowen, who is a composer also known as a pop performer Bowen, spelled a B-O space E-N.
Right.
And generally his sound is that he would fit well with the Katamari type crowd. He's previously composed Lovely Planet, which is a kind of speedrunning first-person shooter with a very Katamari type aesthetic. He was a sequencer and a producer on Two Brothers, which is not to be confused with Brother, A Tale of Two Sons, completely different game. I composed for Moshi Moshi and Winos and a lot of kind of smaller games that you might not have heard of, but they're all really interesting. Generally, when I was doing my research on him, I found that pretty much anything that he has his name on that he's associated with is worth kind of keeping your eye on. It's really interesting and really odd selection of games. But anyways, I really like the main theme from Super Ubi Land because it's such a contradictory track in nature. It's cheery to the point of almost sounding sarcastic, especially with the singing cartoon voices in the background. But at the same time, it feels just 100% sincere. And you know, if there is any sarcasm in it, there's absolutely no bite. It sounds full and modern and layered, but it has a classic chiptune buried at the very heart of it, which kind of harkens back to the old days of NES platformers, which this game was definitely inspired by. Yeah. And it's built around a very simple, catchy melody, like the classic games were, but it builds so much around it that it really is a complex and layered piece that always just strikes me in a real, it's hard to not smile when you're listening to it. And so I hope you all like it.
Next up, we have Jay Taylor, the man who was responsible for this new podcast in many ways. Jay, what have you brought us musically?
I've chosen a track. Its actual title is just Menu Theme. And it's debatable whether it's from a game as such, because it's kind of from a demo scene type thing that appeared on the PlayStation back in 2008. Entitled Lingering Shadows. And this particular piece of music stood out to me quite a bit, because after you download this, as anybody who's got a PlayStation is familiar with, you get the little thumbnail. Now, sometimes they have audio, and the audio for the thumbnail was this piece of music, and it really struck a chord with me. I like a lot of different types of soundtrack music, but I do have a thing for like big sort of orchestral scores. And this is, it's a really kind of melancholy, almost threatening kind of sound to it. And it really stuck in my memory, and I managed to sort of, I think, well, if memory serves correct, I actually gave away the soundtrack as a free download, because I guess it was just, they weren't necessarily in it for the money when they made this thing. It's just a minute and a half of pretty kind of cracking orchestral score.
I've talked many times on various podcasts about my love of the opening to BioShock. It's not exactly a sort of left field choice in terms of saying, how brilliant I think something is from the video gaming world of the last few years. I mean, it's 7 years ago now, I know, but that intro, the opening sequence, the bit that was on the demo from the plane crash onwards, is still one of my favorite-y gaming things. And I don't know what it would be like without Gary Scheinman's music, that opening sequence where you finally get in the bathysphere and you're taken on rails into the undersea world of Rapture, past the whales and the Big Daddy's doing welding and all that sort of thing. But I don't think it would be as amazing. And again, shouldn't use this word for BioShock, but I'm going to. Immersive. It's a stunning sequence, and I can only think that either the music was composed with the visuals already in place, or vice versa, because it feels like it's choreographed. So there are very definite crescendos and rises and falls as things happen on screen, as the bathysphere goes from the station to Rapture itself. It's only quite short, but and obviously during the game you've got Ryan's monologue as well. Even without that, I just think it's a stunning piece of music and deeply atmospheric. I love everything about it, from the complex sort of fiddle that underpins the whole thing, rises and falls, and the orchestral clashes, and just the general sense of looming dread that comes with it. But yeah, also sort of profound sense of discovery. I just think it's amazing. I don't actually know. I know the LA Philharmonic are credited on Bioshock 2, but I think some of the strings on this one sound like they're synthesized. So I'm not sure if it's all organic or whether it was done in a studio. But either way, I don't much mind. It sounds fantastic. And yes, let us journey once again into rapture. And our Bioshock podcast was way back in February 2013, and that is Kane & Rintz issue 69. You can find that at kaneandrintz.com or, of course, on iTunes. Ryan, then, your next pick, please.
My next song is the title theme from Little Inferno, kind of an odd game put out by 2D Boy, who had been coming off of World of Goo, former EA employees that spun off into an independent studio of their own. And it's, for anyone who's ever played it, it's a very odd little game. It plays like an iPad, like kind of touch distraction game where you throw things into a fireplace, they make funny noises as they burn up, and you're rewarded with money. And it feels so kind of tonally rich. Like it feels like it is a satire of something, but it's always hard to tell what they're satiring or whether they're just satiring the notion of video game satiring things in the first place. Like it's a very complicated game. You walk away with very complicated feelings after playing it, but and so creating a soundtrack for the game that is supposed to present itself as the most lighthearted and meaningless of video games, while at its heart also try to put forth an image of being the darkest and most complicated and intricately woven game, it would be difficult. And Kyle Gabler, who is the composer, put up some descriptions of each of the tracks on his website where you can download the soundtracks for free, and kind of spoke towards this dilemma of, you know, how do we want to musically brand this game? And especially, what do we want people to, hear initially upon opening the game in the first place? What is the first impression that we want to give people about this game that has so many conflicting identities, not working in its favor? It's not a bad thing like it would be for mini games, but the title theme is both a real kind of dark and haunting tune that has kind of the sound of industry and of a society that's kind of given up, with the sound of burning fire in the background, But at the same time, it's also like a real kind of inspiring triumph of the human spirit type sound. And these are all words that cannot exist together. And so I should just defer to letting the song speak for itself.
Little Inferno, then. Now, our next selection comes from Jason.
Only my mum calls me Jason. My next track. I'm a massive fan of Metal Gear Solid anyway. I've been a fan of Harry Gregson Williams' Metal Gear scoring since he came on board with Sons of Liberty. But to me, his theme scoring for this game peaked with a particular track on 4. Try and avoid spoilers on this.
Must avoid spoilers.
Anybody who listens to the Metal Gear Solid 4 show will know exactly what, because I know I went on a bit about it there, but it's a track pretty much right at the end of the game. And I was listening to it today, and it's testament to how evocative the piece of music can, or a piece of music to anybody. It depends, you know, totally subjective as to what it is, but it's amazing how evocative this stuff can be. Like, even now when I'm listening to this, I can feel my throat tightening up, you know, and I really get quite, really emotional listening to it. It's really, yeah, because I find it's such a beautiful piece of music. And you know, it's like the track itself is father and son, but the first minute is like just this really, well, the first 55 seconds, it goes into this quite gentle sort of, there's a very gentle acoustic guitar. Just after a minute, it swells up with this big sort of militaristic percussion and a soul, what sounds like a trumpet, but again, similar to what you were saying earlier, it's hard to tell whether it's synthetic or whether it's your proper orchestral score. Mm. The stuff seems so damn good these days. Mm. But it was just that point in the game when this music came. I'm blubbing like a child at this point in the game. It's just it floors me even now when I'm listening to it. I still feel just, and it's just listening to the music. But when you added that to the visuals and the scene as it played out, it was absolutely. I will never forget it. And it's testament to the music itself, because it bonds that scene together, and I'm worried that I might be shooting my load too soon on this first show, but it's like it is probably right up there with my very favorite pieces of game scoring, you know, because it's really is on another level when you put it, you know, when you mixed it with the visuals.
Thank you. We talked all about Metal Gear Solid 4 Guns of the Patriots at length back in issue 49 of the Kane & Rince podcast. You can find it, of course, on kaneandrince.com and iTunes.
49. Wow. Time flies, yeah.
Sure does. My second selection is a jaunty number, to say the least. Now, Captain Toad is a character. I've always been a Toad fan from the Mario series, going all the way back to the early Mario games. But Captain Toad is a specific Toad who adventures forth through space and various places. He turned up first, I believe, in Super Mario Galaxy, and a little version of this piece of music existed then, just a few bars, and it was known as Toad Brigade back then, featured in both the Super Mario Galaxy games, which are, you know, some of my favorite video games of all time. His tune and his role recently became embellished in Super Mario 3D World on the Wii U, and of course, it's as soon as I played these odd little puzzle levels in the midst of all the Mario mayhem, I thought, well, here's a game in the making, and sure enough, it's on the way. Treasure Tracker, Captain Toad, coming this winter, holiday time 2014 in North America, and early January 2015 in Europe and Australia. Looking forward to it because I like those Toad levels. It's a different sort of a thing to the main Mario 3D type of gameplay, but I like it in its own right. And I love the character Captain Toad, and I love the fact that Mahito Yokotar embellished his already sweet little ditty for Captain Toad into a couple of minutes long piece with a sort of an NES style underpinning of bass, chip tunes type stuff back there. But as the tune goes on, it evolves into a recorder led piece, which is, you know, something we don't hear a lot of. Saxophones and recorders are instruments that's, you know, all too rarely appear on video game soundtracks. Anyway, it's just adorable, and you know, because I'm a sort of strange egotist, or morbid person, I'm not sure which, I have decided that after I've subjected the weeping hordes at my funeral to Brother Woodrow, Closing Prayer by the Afghan Whigs, and Hello, I Must Be Going, as sung by Groucho Marx, as my cardboard coffin actually starts to wheel into the furnace, as I'm cremated, I want this piece of music playing. Now, while we haven't yet done a podcast about Super Mario 3D Land or World, maybe someday we hope to, we did cover the core Super Mario Brothers series, starting with the original Super Mario Brothers, and that's issue 109, along with 2 and 3 and the Lost Levels, and then you can follow the sequence along, and we end up with Super Mario Galaxies 1 and 2, so check those podcasts out. And now it's time for our final selection of this Sound of Play 1 for Ryan. Now, I wasn't expecting Perfect Dark Zero to come up.
That's right.
Necessarily.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a game that a lot of people have a very kind of a negative reaction to upon hearing its name. And I remember quite liking it back in the day, back when it was new, when it first came out. I popped it in again last night just to kind of give myself a refresher. And I think everyone is right. it's not that great. But that's not to say that there aren't some fantastic things in there. And so I wanted to kind of draw attention to some of the really excellent work that has gone into a game that, you know, is perhaps not, has not aged as well as some of the other Xbox launch titles. So this is a song called Datacore Demolition Training, and it is the background music from the first level of the Perfect Dark Zero game. It is composed by a David Klinick, who is a Rare employee, or at least was at the time. I don't know whether he still works there or not, but he also composed for the original Perfect Dark on the N64, and he did some kind of minor additional music for Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts. Beyond that, he's done a little bit of film and television, although I wasn't able to dig up a lot of details on that. And he has some independent music up on SoundCloud. But anyways, this song is such a great kind of quintessential spy piece. And I love the way that it evolves throughout its playtime. It starts off as a very kind of like sly and down tempo song that kind of like the feeling of walking into a building that you're not supposed to be in and checking around every corner in the darkness to make sure that there's no patrolling guards. And it has a very cool kind of like part cyberpunk feel to it, but also using some lovely real instruments. And it evolves throughout the song into, and there's a point that you'll recognize where it bursts to life with this wonderful piano part that really kicks up the tempo of what's happening in the song. And it's a small example of the diverse but musically very, very lovely soundtrack to Perfect Dark Zero, which, regardless of your feelings about the game, is probably a soundtrack worth tracking down. And I hope that this one little track will whet your appetite for the excellent, excellent Perfect Dark Zero soundtrack. We'll be right back.
Now, Jay, your final selection for this Sound of Play is from a much-loved Dreamcast favourite from Sega and Smilebit team. Now, I say much-loved Dreamcast favourite, but of course, since then, it's come out on a number of other systems quite recently, found its way onto PSN and 360 and Vita, and nobody really talks about it anymore. It was one of those games that everyone was desperate to get re-released, and when it happened, people kind of went, OK, it's back out again. But that soundtrack, eh?
Indeed. I actually struggled to pick which one track I would choose for the show, which was, you know, because I've got both soundtracks, both this and the sort of sequel as well. And I do play them a lot. I like, you know, the soundtrack's pretty special, as was the game. But what is the track? Well, that would be Sweet Soul Brother by Hideki Nakamura from the original Jet Set Radio. And it's really hard to know what it was like. If I'd heard this music independently outside of the game, I don't think I would have had the same attachment to it. But when you mixed, you know, this soundtrack with the visuals, with everything that was going on in that game, with the brightly colored graphics, with the, you know, incredible cel shaded stuff that they did back then, which was, I don't know.
I think it's one of those games where it really is like, I think, perhaps greater than the sum of its parts in a way.
And also
just like everything, yeah, everything feeds off everything else. So the audio aesthetic lives with the visual aesthetic, and the attitude of the characters kind of ties in. It feels like a, you know, like a complete piece. It doesn't feel like lots of disparate elements kind of chucked together. I think maybe that's why. Because I think when you play it now, and I have it on Vita and PlayStation 3, and I still enjoy it to a point, but I find the controls are very unfriendly. It's quite clunky.
I genuinely struggled with the game, but it's the same thing with the sequel, although obviously the controls worked a lot better with the sequel. But the music for both these games, and I would say if I had to choose a preference, I would probably go with the sequel soundtrack more than the first game, but which is this track is from. But then there's a remixed version of this track on the sequel, but I thought I would stick with the original version for this show. But it's just one of those games, isn't it? It just sticks in your mind, and it stayed with me. And I mean, I've hunted down and paid on import prices for these soundtracks, because these were before the days of torrents and various other sort of legal or non-legal means to pick up game soundtracks. But, you know, I paid well over the odds money for these soundtracks, CDs. But that's genuinely because I absolutely adored the game. So, yeah.
This is one I have covered in my mostly often weekly, but not always, Monday column, Music Monday. It's alliterative. That's why it's on a Monday, where I talk about some game music that I am intrigued by or interested in some way. Not always my favorite track. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's something that just took my fancy. But there it is, canarince.com on a Monday. You'll usually find me talking about games music. And this show sort of ties in with that. Turrican 2 is the game in question. The final fight, it wasn't the final fight. There were loads more Turricans after this. Turrican 3 and Mega Turrican and Super Turrican, although the console ones were sort of remixed versions of the original Commodore 64 and Amiga games. Now, I'm talking about the Amiga version here. And the music was by Der Maestro, as I call him, Chris Hulsbeck, German composer, has done lots and lots of amazing classic synth style stuff over the years. The track is the main theme that plays over the attract mode, and it's called The Final Fight. Now, it's a long one, which is why we're putting it at the end. So if you it's really not to your tastes, you can duck out before the end. But I recommend that you don't. This 7 minutes and 41 has been one of my favorites for 23 years now. It's a bit of a legend between me and my friend Simon, particularly, who's a bit of a keyboards whiz himself, and as well as writing some of his own tunes for things like local radio stations and jingles for pachinko halls where he lives in Japan. He's also, can you believe this? You know the Korg DS software that you can get? There's been a few versions of it. It's really surprisingly powerful and comprehensive Korg synthesizer in the palm of your hand. He has worked, I don't know if he's finished it yet, but he was working on a full cover version of this incredibly complex, layered, eclectic within itself synthesizer suite. That recalls really the sort of 80s works of Edgar Froese or Tangerine Dream, who younger gamers and younger people will know from the recent from the score for Grand Theft Auto 5. So it's interesting how things come full circle. Anyway, before we conclude with this space opera epic, it just remains for me, Leon Cox, to thank Jay Taylor and Ryan Heyman. We'll see you next time on Canarince Sound of Play. And this is The Final Fight by Chris Hulsbeck. And it is completely epic.